You have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever.
Stay hungry.
Hungry. Stay hungry, stay foolish.
This is the E-Commerce All-Stars podcast, brought to you with heart by Nedimo.com.
So, hey, welcome everyone. Today we are doing a joint podcast between the Next Level Podcast and the E-Commerce All-Stars. And the topic of the day is e-commerce. So we're looking at 10 excellent ways to increase e-commerce conversions. We've got Nat on the call as well. So we've got three people on the call. And we've got 10 different talking points about excellent ways to increase e-commerce conversions. So it should be a lot of value and it should be a lot of fun. Well, I guess we should kick things off by talking about how we met, Brandon, in Tampa at the IBM Amplify event there last year, where we wore, not only were we the only two IBM futurists from Canada, we also wore the exact same shirt one day.
Yes, we did. That was quite interesting. So, and then everybody, of course, wanted photos of us all and everything. But
yeah, and then you photoshopped. So Bob felt we had a picture with Bob, who we had Bob on the podcast the other day too, the retail doc. And so you photoshopped. Bob felt left out, so we photoshopped. You photoshopped the shirt onto Bob as well, so that we were all wearing the same shirt.
Yes.
Yeah. You should start up that Photoshop and stuff again. That was hilarious. I remember you had one where you were photoshopped as a wrestler and you were putting Terry in a headlock, Terry Duper, on there, who's also an IBM futurist. That always made me laugh whenever I saw those Photoshop
pictures. What's funny about
that
one, actually, although quick story on that is,
okay,
Terry wanted a quote from me, and so I went ahead and I gave him a quote, and then I didn't hear from him. And so I sent him an email with that picture, and I said, "Did I scare you?" And it was a picture of me, with him in the headlock. So it was funny because it worked. Because the next, 2 minutes later, he wrote me back and was like, "Sorry, Brian, I've just been super busy, blah blah blah." Right? But I think humor is a huge,
thing
that people forget because they want to be so personally professional, right? But you can add humor in it and still be professional. And also, people need to be people. We all need to have a lot of fun.
Yeah,
so
everyone likes to laugh, right? So
yeah, exactly. So speaking of fun, I think this podcast is going to be an absolute blast. So you want to...
Oh, for sure.
Let's get rolling with it.
Let's get into it. It's going to be a lot of fun. 10 excellent ways to increase e-commerce conversions. So the first thing I'm going to say for e-commerce conversions... The best thing you can do to increase your conversions is to send the most relevant traffic possible. So you want to have traffic that's related to the offer. So a lot of this comes down to search engine optimization. So I would recommend that people dig into, first of all, you want to connect your site to the Google Search Console, which is a part of the, it was formerly known as Google Webmaster Tools. It still is known as that, but it's more specifically, it's Google Search Console, and that will show you the keywords that you're ranking for, and you want to dig into where your keywords are most relevant to the offer that you're making, and those are the keywords that you want to optimize for. So you, this Google Search Console will show you things like where you're ranking for these relevant terms, and if you're in 11 to 15 or any one of these spots where you're not on page one but you're close, those are the best opportunities to do a little bit of link building, update your content, tweak your meta description, things like that. And these are going to help you get more traffic to those relevant pages. And then you can do things with different graphics and more links. And by driving that relevant traffic through to your offer, you're going to get more conversions. So that's my first tip.
I'm going to say something. That explains why I don't get any relevant traffic then, because my SEO is horrible.
Oh, well, Google Search Console is a super powerful tool. It's really come a long way recently, too. And so I recommend the SEO plugin Yoast. I think it's the largest one, Yoast for WordPress. Is your site built on WordPress?
Yes, it is. Awesome. And I haven't plugged in Yoast yet. I've heard of it. I use it on a number of client sites. But, you know, I'm the typical mechanic where my vehicle may not run as well as everybody else's that I work on.
Okay. Well, I mean, all of the SEO plugins, even out-of-the-box WordPress has really robust SEO. However, I like Yoast because it does preview the way that your pages are going to look in Google, because ranking is, where you rank in Google is obviously important, but also that it's attracting the click. So I do things like title case my meta description and really work with the title, and it shows you in Google Search Console what your click-through rate is. And so this guy, Neil Patel, is an SEO expert that I follow, and he says anything with a click-through rate of less than 5%, you should be tweaking and optimizing to get as close to or above 5% click-through rate. A lot of title adjustments, meta tag description updates and stuff like that goes a long way to getting that relevant traffic that leads to more conversions. So I know that you are an expert of site optimization and of e-commerce. You build shopping carts and complete custom situations. So you're saying about rotating images and video, you don't think this is a good thing, you're saying?
No.
On homepages.
No. So I guess that's one of my biggest things is when you go to a site and the first thing you see is these big images on the site. And of course, it should say right there, it should capture your attention and tell you what it is that you do or what it is you're selling basically your now I'm forgetting the marketing term, but basically what it is someone can jump in and fill me in on what it's called when you try and sell yourself, what are the key.
You want to have that focused messaging, right? Whereas when you have a rotating image and video, it's like, okay, well, it's talking about all these different, showing all these different things and completely, how are people supposed to know what to do? You want to have that one clear, concise call to action.
That's exactly right. And so that's what I was getting at is you don't want to have a call to action or a nice, clear, concise message. And then, okay, that rotates out and there's a new message there. And then that rotates out and there's a new message again, because what happens is it does two things. It distracts from their attention. So now all of a sudden I'm starting to lose focus on why I'm there. You're starting to tell me many, many different messages. And I understand why people are trying to capture all audiences. But the problem is that person who's seen that first message, if they do sit there and they see the second one, it's apparently the ratio goes down to like only 5% of the traffic actually bother to read or even impacted in any way by that second message. So get rid of it. Think about the 80-20 rule and just ixnay it. Keep it simple. Don't rotate it. With videos, what I was getting at there is it's always nice to have videos up on your site and near the top, because it's always good if someone wants to push play and then learn more about what it is you do. Videos are good for that, but don't have them auto load either, because you're going to see your bounce rates. I've seen bounce rates change immensely the second you turn off autoplay. So it's just trying to get rid of those distractions and capture that audience while they're on your site is my biggest goal there. And that kind of goes back to what you're saying about relevant traffic. If you're getting the relevant traffic, then your message doesn't need to change. Your message can be consistent with the traffic that's coming to the site.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And keeping it consistent like that is just really important. So what's your take on autoplay videos? Do you like autoplay or do you prefer to have people click the video?
My take is don't use autoplay. But it all depends a little bit on certain things. So if you have a video right at the top, if the video has audio, I don't necessarily think that it's a great idea to have autoplay. If your video is more or less one of those kind of like almost like a background video that's playing, and it might have visual components come up, that's a little different. Because it can pull you in. But it also depends on your audience, to be honest with you. For example, I've got one client that is a rehab facility, and they had a video that was auto playing, but it was a super hard impact hitting video. Very well done, but I mean, it was pretty graphic. Like, it showed you, you know, what happens when you're down in the dumps and all that kind of stuff.
Oh.
Which you don't want to have that loading automatically, especially if you're at work and for whatever reason you look this stuff up and then all of a sudden you have these speakers blasting this message.
That's it. It can catch you off guard if you're just working along. And so I used to have it on one of my pages, but I took it off on one of our pages actually for profilejetpack.com. We had our webinar replay. I had it set up to autoplay, but I took it off because it caught me off guard one day. I opened up the page and there I am talking right away, and it's like, oh, geez, I didn't even realize how loud my speakers were. And, you know, that doesn't make for the best user experience. If someone wants to watch the video, then they can set up their speakers and then press play. So I think that makes for a better experience, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, I think we're on the same page with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's nothing worse than opening a website page and suddenly this really loud video happens when you least expect it. It's awful, awful.
Well, there we're 3 for 3 on that one.
Cool. Right
so
on. So,
what sort of difference in figures do you have on that? Like a rough estimate of, like, I don't know. Say your average bounce rate. You know, people bounce after what, a minute and a half. What would you expect for that to change the time people are on the page?
Well, I can only talk from the experience specific to that one encounter because I'm not really giving you realistic numbers because of that. But I mean, we were seeing like the bounce rate was so high, like they weren't even on the page for 15 to 30 seconds and they were gone. And then once we turned off the autoplay, then they went through and it dropped. They started viewing different pages and going through your site a lot more.
Wow.
I don't know what the numbers were on the bounce rate, like the difference in bounce rate, but I definitely saw a different journey, a different user experience as a whole. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I've heard that sometimes autoplay performs and that I've heard from other people that sometimes non-autoplay performs, but really if you just think about it from a user experience point of view, you know, it's if you don't have the autoplay on, then people aren't going to get caught off guard, and you know, you're going to avoid that potential negative consequence of having the video and the loud audio catch someone off guard. So I think that not having autoplay is a good idea.
Yeah,
so
but that said, there is always the one option, which kind of leads to one of the other things you were going to talk about today, which is you could always split test it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep, split testing is huge. So I think split testing is just vital to improving and optimizing. So, but a lot of people get caught up split testing multiple things, like multivariate testing. I think it's more important to just do a straight up A-B test, where you're testing one element at a time, specifically the headline. Excuse me. The headline is the most, like David Ogilvy, for example, said that your headline is 80 cents of your advertising dollar. You know, so the first thing you need is someone to read your headline. So that's the first thing you should test, is the headline. And then from there, you can test tons of different things. You can test your copy, images. But I think it's just important to focus on one main element at a time. And yeah, there are a few different tools that you can use to do that. Yeah, so like Optimizely. And then I don't know, is there one that you would recommend, Brandon? Because I guess I would imagine that you do this a fair bit with your with some of your shopping carts and stuff like that?
There are. I think actually Optimizely is one that I use.
Optimizely? Yeah.
Yeah, that's I've been really finding that's a really good one. Trying to think if it was – there was one. I think it was called Conversio, but don't quote me on that one. Everybody out there who now goes and looks it up and finds out that doesn't do quite what they wanted, I apologize. But no, I find Optimizely works really well for that because it's, you know, some basic split testing that you want to do. I can't think of any others off the top of my head, to be honest with you. I could have them in within the next 2 minutes, but you know,
it's all good. I mean, Optimizely, the main thing is just to be doing it, to find a tool that works for you and do the A/B testing, with those conversion pages, you know, that's pretty vital.
And I do know there are some extensions, too, that would allow for that, too, depending on what platform you're on, extensions or plugins that are available to do that as well. So I think, it, like you said, it's a matter of finding out what's best fit for you. Optimizely works in some cases, and in others it doesn't, because it is a SaaS-based solution. You might find it a plugin for WordPress or an extension for Magento or some sort of solution like that might be a better way to go. But
I plan to do some more research into Google solution. I used to use Google's website optimizer, and there's a plugin that integrated nicely with WordPress. However, I believe they took that tool and made it a part of Google Analytics now. So don't quote me on that. I need to do some research around that for sure, because I like to use Google solutions when possible. So I think it is possible to still do through Google, but I'd need to see the proper way to integrate that with WordPress for sure.
That makes sense. I personally like to do everything through Google if I can too. And I don't know if this is just my own perception of it, but I find that the more the things you're using Google for, the higher your page starts to get ranked. Because I don't know if it
makes sense, right? Finding. Well, just like with YouTube, one of the reasons why I like to, and why we're planning to syndicate our podcast to YouTube as well, is just because obviously Google owns YouTube. So they want, one stat that I heard, now this is an old stat, but it's from Forrester Research, that said that any page with a YouTube video is 500% more likely to get onto page one of Google. So, and now that number might have changed because that stat is a few years old. However, I think it's still relevant to use YouTube as much as possible if you want to get your content right. Because then even just for getting it into people who are searching on YouTube as well, you know, it's going to help. It's going to help for sure getting YouTube into pages. Plus, yeah, it's reliable, right?
Well, also you can spend some time actually optimizing your YouTube videos, can't you? If you get the right keywords, you can get those on the front page of Google. I know it's not as easy as it was before, but also people search for everything on YouTube these days. And if you optimize it properly for keywords, you can get quite a lot of traffic, can't you, from YouTube videos, right?
Absolutely. And since we're talking about conversions, a great way to use YouTube videos for conversions is to use annotations. So you can set up clickable annotations, and they're free to use. You can have an image overlay show up at any point in the video or throughout the whole video that has a call to action for someone to click. And then you can use that to send traffic to your offer pages or wherever, like an opt-in page, for example. And that's something that I've used to get a bunch of opt-ins. So it definitely works.
Interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
Cool.
So I was just looking here, and I was thinking about a couple other things that we wanted to cover. One of the things I wanted to talk about is, like, once you're at the site again. Yeah. For me, it's all about once you're there, because I'm more of the on-site conversions and on-site development and that sort of thing, whereas you guys are the awesome experts at bringing them there, and then you've got some extra pieces as far as, I really liked what you were talking about, what you're going to cover in a few minutes about the checkout processes. But one of the things I like to mention to people is product reviews and social proof. I think it just adds so much value on your site to have both, either or, one of the two, it doesn't matter, but you have to have some level of expertise shown. So if that means you have people saying great things about you and your service you're selling, or you and your product, like the product specifically, doesn't even have to be your own. Like, if you're selling a product that someone else sells and you find that someone's done a great review on it, you know, get that review on your site. I think it's very powerful in getting them to hit that final button to purchase. And the other thing is social proof, which is, you know, why you? Why is your company the place they should be buying from? So any awards you've won or any, you know, anything like that, or even just a review on your company. We bought from these guys and they had it delivered in the next day, or things like that. Just one little thing there that adds that extra oomph to sell that doesn't come from you. I think is just very
absolutely powerful. Yeah. Me and that were actually just talking about this. Testimonials are one example of this, and I'd be happy to do a testimonial for you if you need one, Brandon, because I know you did one for me, and I would love to integrate that into one of my sales pages potentially with Profile Jetpack. I really appreciate that. And that's the one thing that I think our Profile Jetpack sales page is lacking right now is testimonials, because they are, everyone's going to say how great they are, but when it's coming from another person that's endorsing someone, that carries another level of credibility. And I think that you do a great job on your sites as well, plus with your branding. Like, we're all IBM futurists, but putting the IBM logo and saying that you're an IBM futurist really communicates that level of expertise. I think that I'm also going to explore doing a bit more guest posting on so that I can also borrow the brand credibility of places like entrepreneur.com and Business Insider and Huffington Post, just because you're right, by adding those brands, it really does add another level of credibility for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people that have put, Huffington Post and Entrepreneur Magazine and it instantly adds credibility just for me even. And I mean, it's just one of those things that you see that and you go, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about because he's written an article or he's done something with Entrepreneur or Huffington Post or whatever. It just
Personally, I like to publish on my own sites, and that's why my sites, that's why I've enjoyed well over a million visitors to my websites. But, I like to build my own brands, but at the same time, one of the best ways to do that is to associate with other strong brands. And, I've definitely seen that since I started working with IBM, just being an IBM futurist definitely does have that level of expertise and trustability that comes with such a big brand. And I think that more of that is definitely a good thing. So definitely I'm going to be exploring some guest posting in the future.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing too. Like you said, you want to build your own brand, you want to do your own content. There's no doubt about that with everything. I mean, e-commerce or even personal branding. But you can use the two to leverage each other very quickly. And so that never hurts at all.
Yeah, I agree completely. Absolutely. I don't like sending people to other people's websites, to be honest. I'd rather send them to my own.
Yeah,
so, you know. So would I. There's no doubt. But if I can, if I've done something for somebody else and I can use that to kind of, show the world that, hey, I've done this for these guys or I'm doing this for these guys too. And it adds that level of credibility, then by all means, I'm going to do that.
Plus, there are SEO benefits too, because when you do write a guest post for one of these big sites, with links, all links are not created equal, right? And links from those high authority domains can really boost your ranking. So usually you can add two or three links at the end of a post. And that said, not only will that give you the brand credibility, but it's also going to boost the page rank of whatever you use in your bio box at the end of your article.
Yeah, exactly. So, for sure. I think it's a good time for you to talk about the long copy versus short copy, because this is something I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on.
Well, I think that this is, it really does relate to the offer. So if you're selling, a cheap little $2 ebook or something, you're not going to need to write, 100 pages about it to sell it. But generally, I've studied copywriting extensively, and it's consistent in the copywriting community that long copy always outperforms short copy. And so the more you tell, the more you sell is one way that's said. And so this can also be seen in things like product launches, where it's essentially a sideways sales letter. So that's basically a sales presentation that's done over the course of 4 videos. So I think this really comes back to the more time that someone invests into a sales message, so the more time someone spends reading something or watching something, the more they want to get a return on that investment of time. So I think these are reasons why long copy has been shown to outperform short copy in most cases. That's my take on that.
Yeah, no, that's actually quite interesting. And the reason I was wondering is because I've almost been an advocate of the opposite, but that's only because I am, when it comes to me buying something online, there's two things that I go through. I don't want to be bored and read all this extra copy that I don't have to read, so I tend to read the headings, and if it's in point form, awesome. If it's not, then I kind of skim through. So yeah. Long copy for me doesn't always work. However, what you said there, I just reinvested kind of my brain as to what my mind is going through in that sales process when someone's trying to sell to me, and I do need that longer bit of information, and I do want to read more and more about it, more particularly on depending on how much I'm spending. For example, when I was buying my truck, I spent hours upon hours upon hours reading every bit of piece of information I could on about the various vehicles. Now, then I'm going to go and buy a $5 a month app. I don't want to be bored with a long amount of copy. I just get to the point and let me hit the button to buy it because I'm going to test it out. If it doesn't work, I'm going to stop. Right, but you can't, when you're buying a $50,000 truck, you don't want to be sitting there going, yeah, okay, I don't like this. Now I can't sell it for a few years because I'm not going to get my money back, right?
Yeah. So
that makes sense. Those are two extreme examples, but it does kind of correlate to what you're saying about long copy versus short copy. So I think that makes a lot of sense, and I'd have to agree with you on that one.
Cool.
But also I think it depends on where they are in their journey, right? Because they may not be ready for the long copy. They may actually just need some sort of small bite-sized chunks just to get them into the buying mode, you know?
Right. And actually that's a very good point, because it's almost a great segue into one thing I was going to talk about, which is on-site chat. One reason I'm a big advocate, and people know this because they've seen articles I've written. I don't write a lot of articles, but I've written one on site chat. And the reason I believe in it so heavily is because people can – two reasons. People want an answer, and they want it fast. The old days of picking up a phone and getting an answer have completely gone away, because you now get put in a queue and you're waiting on hold for 40 minutes. And so I prefer, as we're finding statistics wise, that a lot of people prefer to just hit the chat button and ask a question. One thing I'm going to forewarn people on is if you're not available and you don't have people who can jump into that chat session and answer the questions right away, don't bother or find a solution to that to make it work for you, because the last thing I want to do, and I'm finding it's happening more and more with the more sites to get the chats up, is I get in there, I hit the chat, and then it says, you are number 400 in the queue.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that's lovely. So now I'm going to have to sit here and wait for the answer. Yeah. Well, I got other things to do, right?
Yeah.
So that defeats the whole purpose of what I think a chat should be, which is getting somebody an answer to their question right away, and then using it as an on-site salesperson. So now I'm able to not only direct you to a page with a link, which is what most of them are doing, but take it that extra level and ask them a little bit more about what they're looking for and try and answer any questions they have, so that you're, in a sense, acting as that salesperson and converting that sale while they're there. I've seen some sites do it really well, and that's what they're doing. They're asking specific questions to lead you towards that final sale. And they do it just like if you're inside a store talking to a really good sales guy. And when I say good sales guy, I'm not saying a guy who's there pressure selling you. I'm talking about the guy who's asking the right questions to lead you down that sale, to get you to buy that pair of shoes or whatever it might be. And you can do that through chat.
So what chat app do you use? I'm a believer in chat, but I've used Meebo, founders of Meebo. I use that for a bit. And now I'm using one called Get Site Control, which is a WordPress plugin. And it's a good one. But to use the chat, you have to be logged into their system. you know? It's just not a, so I have it set up right now. So it's a contact us. It's basically a contact form that looks like a chat widget. It says contact us, and then they can click it and then just fill out their name and email and a message, and I can get back to them. But I'd prefer to have that chat if it was a good interface. So I'm curious as to what use.
Okay. Well, for me, because it's a very simple solution, I use something called talk.to, and it's TAWK.to.
Okay.
Now I use it, but you do have to log into their interface. But it's a pretty simple solution, and it does work really well. Now, there are other ones out there. Now, just give me half a second, and I'll have an answer for you, that don't require you to log into their interface. You can actually integrate with Skype or your online or your actual messenger, mm-hmm. So that you can
Facebook
be
messenger?
Anywhere.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you can integrate with Facebook Messenger, but I know there's ones like, I'll list a couple here.
Some integrate with Skype, right?
So you can integrate it with Skype. Some of them you can integrate with your phone messenger. So whatever your preferred messenger is on your phone, you can use it with that. Or they have an app that allows you to plug it into your phone, and so you can be anywhere and answer people's questions. Bold Chat does something like that. And another one is intercom.io. That one's a little bit more involved. So you typically want to have a team of people for that one. Because what that does is allows anybody within your organization. So even if it's a team of three, you can have that integrated into whichever app you're on or your phone, and whoever answers, any one of you can answer the inquiry. So that's a little bit of a different solution, but Bold Chat definitely allows you to integrate it with your phone, if nothing else. Talk.to is the one I use. It's a 100% free solution, which is part of why I use it, because I like to keep my costs low. You do have to be logged in, like you said, to use that one.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, I recommend checking out Get Site Control, because they do have some other, it seems like really solid software, and they also have some other features that I plan to test, like an exit pop-up. So like when someone goes to exit the page, it'll have a pop-up that shows up. It's free as well, right? So
what that one was again, because sometimes for some reason Get Site Control.
There are about 10 or 12 different apps within the app, within the app, and I guess they call them widgets, and they seem pretty cool. So I only discovered it recently, but it seems to be a really great solution.
Yeah, see, I don't use a lot of those ones that are WordPress extensions necessarily, because a lot of the sites that my clients work with aren't on WordPress necessarily. But I also know that 80% of the world out there is on WordPress, so those extensions are important to know about, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cool. All right, so what did we have next here on the list? We had personalized custom concierge. So what do you mean by that?
Well, let me just go a little bit out there. Now, this isn't something you're going to see on everybody's top 10 list for conversions, and I know why. It's because it takes a lot to get set up. but it's still very new. IBM Watson is a good example. You can use something called conversation. So it's, in a sense, it's a chat bot. But what I'm talking about with a personalized custom concierge is customizing your product. So if you've got, let's say, for example, I'll talk about an existing client of mine. She sells weighted blankets. Well, you can't just buy any blanket any size, because they all depend on your size. And you don't know what weight you need unless you know how big you are or the person you're buying it for is. So there's a series of questions you need to really answer in order to get that personalized product in the end. And it's very similar to another store that we're working on right now where he's got a series of different questions he wants to ask people when they come to the site so that he can build them the right bike. To the specs that they need, height-wise, how high does the seat and handlebars need to be, these types of things. But you can set that up. I mean, the easiest way is just with a simple form, and then, you know, sends that information in. But it's nicer to, nowadays, because of chatbots and artificial intelligence and machine learning and all the cognitive capabilities that are out there, you can set it up for a fairly simple way if you call me, of course. But anyway, no, there's other people out there who can do it too, but we're working on it.
You're really great at what you do, so yeah, people should definitely call you.
Oh, thanks. We're working on a solution that's going to work on multiple platforms. And so what you do basically is you come up with a kind of a typical set of questions like that you're going to ask the client when they come in the door, you know, of your store. And then so this concierge is essentially sitting there asking those questions of you, and then in a real-time chat type situation, gathering that information and then giving you a product recommendation that is the right fit for you. So it allows a personalized experience, which I think is the way a lot of the world is going, especially with the millennials and the younger generation as a whole. They still want to be treated as an individual, a very unique individual, and they want that personalized experience. And I think that's the way a lot of e-commerce and just the whole internet in general is going. And so by adding some level of a personalized product or a personalized concierge that can, you know, basically hold your hand through developing, creating something unique to you, I think is a huge, huge opportunity that could be taken advantage of and can be done for a fairly low cost. It's not something that you need to blow your budget on either. And so that's kind of my thinking there. I've seen it done at a few trade shows in various ways, but really, really personalizing it is really where we're heading, and I'm looking forward to this year because there's going to be a lot of things that we're working on internally here that are just going to allow for the various people to start deploying this, and then we're going to really see the numbers. I know that there's a personal concierge, I think it's on 1-800-Flowers, it's driven by Watson actually, and they just did an article out about what their stats were. I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but the thing that's funniest about it is the first question, the most common comment or word in the personal concierge experience when you're talking with a bot, keep that in mind, is hi. So they're saying people are talking and interfacing with a robot the same way they would a human being. It's kind of funny because it allows, you can tell that it still feels personalized. And I think personalizing it to any level you can is going to be a huge bonus to you. In fact, if you go back all the way to the very beginning of our conversation when you're talking about split testing headlines, if there's ways for you to know who this person is and what ad they've clicked on, and then that's going to change the heading on your personal headline on that page to coincide with that, then you need to do that. I mean, that starts to get a little more complex. It can be done fairly, you know, it's not overly complicated, but with the big data that is out there, all that can be done. But all I'm talking about is a simple concierge, which can allow you to customize your product.
Absolutely. And there's a reason why I don't just collect emails, even though I could get more emails if I just went for the email. I also capture people's names so that I can personalize the messaging that I send to them. And because it's one of the best ways to get people to open your emails is to include their name in the subject line. And
oh, you mean don't like it when you get an email that says hello name?
I just got one of those
the other day.
was probably from me, Brandon.
No, actually, I won't say who it was from because they're good friends too. But no.
Yeah, you got to make sure that's proper, of course. I know I use AWeber for my email marketing, and they have one. They have a field that automatically capitalizes the first letter of someone's name too, which I think is a nice little feature. Just that, because people do like to see their name capitalized usually. So I think that's kind of cool. And I think that whenever you can take that personalization and apply it to a landing page as well, where it says someone's name on the landing page, that's great too. And there's another tool that I recently discovered called Pick Snippet. And basically, it enables you to hold up a white piece of paper, like a picture of you holding up a white piece of paper, and then you can personalize what it says on the piece of paper. So you can use the person's name in a message to them on this white piece of paper that you're holding up in any image. So that's kind of cool, too. So, yeah, it's there's any way you can personalize and make it fun is a good thing, in my opinion. Well, not any way, but generally, yes, personalization is good for sure.
What was the email marketing tool you use?
I use AWeber. I like AWeber. I'm looking at Entreport. I'm considering potentially migrating over to that. I don't want to get into Infusionsoft just because I've heard that it's really, it can be a real nightmare. So I'm not interested in signing up for a nightmare, but Entreport seems like a good solution. I want to be able to do advanced segmentation, and AWeber is just not that robust in that respect. But I still like AWeber for the most part. Their autoresponder sequences and stuff like that are easy to set up. I'm familiar with the software, so I do like it. And their form building tool is a big one for me. That's where all the leads come in, is through the forms, right? So I like their form building tool is really great and really easy to use and highly customizable, and I like it. So so that's one of the big reasons why I've stuck with them.
Right on. Cool. I'll just throw one out there too that's actually pretty good in e-commerce. If you have a WooCommerce site or you have a Magento site, there's one called Trigmine. They're fairly new. I think it's Trigmine.com with two G's. They're a very simplistic solution that allows you to have they already have templates that are set up for each of the different types of campaigns you'd want to do. If it's what you're after, but I think a lot of people out there, it might be one worth looking into for them as well.
Drip email seems to be a powerful solution as well.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think there's a lot of value. A lot of people will open up, but not necessarily click through. And if it's, then it makes sense to email them again and try and get them to click through, right? So knowing who opens and doesn't click or who doesn't open, then you can optimize and resend. Like resend with a different subject line, for example, if they don't open. Or try different body copy if they don't click, for example. And I think Drip automates that to a certain extent. So that's why Drip seems intriguing to me as well. But this Trigmine looks cool. Check that out too.
Yeah, for sure. And then the next thing we want to talk about, which is I kind of wanted to talk about them at this point, because through the whole journey, where do you end up at the end is at your checkout process. And so you had a couple items that we wanted to talk about. One was countdown timers and time-sensitive offers. I think that's actually a very understated item, but it's a very powerful tool, and I know that you've used it and used it successfully. So love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. I know from when I was first starting out, for example, the first time I ever used a countdown timer, I just was blown away because I went from getting a few sales to literally over a dozen of the same offer. And so just it adds that little bit of scarcity, you know, that gets people to just buy. You know, it's really probably the most powerful thing that you can do on a sales page to increase conversions is a genuine scarcity offer with a countdown timer. There is a plugin I used to use that I really enjoyed. It was called Scarcity Samurai. And now it's just giving me, it doesn't play nicely with Optimized Press, which is what I use as my main theme for my marketing pages. So, but Optimized Press does have countdown timers built into it as well. And the main thing is not to just have a countdown timer for the sake of, like, you can't just have them all the time just counting down. It has to be genuine scarcity. So I find that when it's tied to an event, it's when it's most successful. So my most successful selling day of the year has been Black Friday the last few years. So, and that's because everyone knows when you make a Black Friday offer, like it's Black Friday, and yeah, there's Cyber Monday, but because it's like, okay, well, you got to take action today or the offer's going to be gone. you know, that really gets people to take action. So I like to make it as relevant as possible. So Nat and I are actually doing one for our new monthly profile Jetpack. So, and the way that we made it relevant is because we're doing a first month trial of $29, and it's only going to be offered as long as I'm 29, because I'm turning 30 on Saturday. So it's like, well, you can get the trial offer as long as I'm 29, but when I'm 30, then the offer's gone. So that's how we're going to work that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So as long as there's a reason behind it and that you remember too. So one thing is like sometimes, and I think this has hurt my conversions. Like I would have it set off. I would say, okay, the countdown ends at midnight, and then, but I wouldn't necessarily stay up until midnight to change the offer. So now I like that Optimized Press has it set up so that you can automatically, when the countdown goes to zero, you can automatically have it go to a like waiting list page or a different page, so that because it does, you know, if you don't change that offer right away, then that's going to hurt credibility and conversions, in my opinion. Like, I don't think that's a good thing to, if the offer is going to be until a certain time, then make sure you change that offer at the time is what I'm getting at there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you know, if somebody finds out that they can get that offer later, even though the countdown timer is done, then word gets out too on that. And you just need to be, like you said in the beginning, it has to be real. And to me, I've talked on your show before about genuine. Like, I don't want to put a countdown timer or a time sensitive offer that I'm just going to then turn around and have the very next day again.
Exactly. It has to be genuine scarcity for it to work. And that's absolutely right. Good call.
Awesome.
So the other thing I wanted to mention is one-click upsells and checkbox upsells. So this is something that does involve a bit of technology. I'm not sure if you have any experience with setting these or...
I do have experience with one-check upsells and checkbox upsells. But we always do it on a custom basis because we tend to find that a lot of the solutions that are out there, they're great solutions, but they are very... Two things. They're one size fits all, and they can be quite expensive when you look at the longer picture. So we've kind of been able to in the end, say, well, you're going to pay, let's say, a minimum, and I'm just throwing this number out there because I'm not 100% on it, but let's say it's $100 a month for one of the solutions, and then over the year, you've already paid $1,200, and that doesn't stop. Plus, some of them take a percentage of your sales, right? So it all depends on if you find the right solution. But again, I really, in many cases, I'll do integration work with many people if that's the way they want to go, because sometimes you can't afford it right up front to drop the cash into a custom solution. But a lot of what we'll do is we'll integrate with your site and build the custom solution into it so that you're not having to pay that ongoing monthly fee. People have given me what for, let me tell you, by the fact that I don't charge up ongoing fees, but I just find that, like I've always talked about, I just have to be more, I have to sell what I feel comfortable selling and be feel good about it, and I always feel that I'd rather say, okay, it's going to cost you this much to build this, and so we can do it for that, or let's integrate with this existing solution that works really good, but you're going to be paying more in the long run, you know what I mean? So that's my experience with it, but I'd like to hear what you taught, if some examples or whatnot about exactly what you mean by the one-click upsells and the checkbox upsells, because I think what you've talked to me about in the past are really, really powerful ideas, and I think you articulate it really well.
So I've seen a few marketers use these, such as Frank Kern and Grant Cardone, and so basically they'll use what's called a tripwire offer on the front end, so a low-priced front-end offer, something like a $7 ebook or something like that, or a popular one these days is they give away something for free, you just pay the shipping. So someone pays the shipping for a physical book or something, for example, and so then their credit card information is in. They click buy, and then it takes them to a video with a one-click upsell button of a higher-priced product. So something like a $299, $399 offer, and then since their payment information has already been essentially processed or half-processed, then if they click that button, then that converts them at the higher price offer. Now, it does seem, I think it's important that if you're going to implement this, you need to kind of, you need to make it clear that, hey, if you click this button, you're going to be charged, you know, another $400 or whatever it is. But nonetheless, I think it's a powerful way to make those sales. And another one is the checkbox upsells, which is where, so you have your core offer, but then there's a checkbox. Often that's already pre-checked. And then, or even if it isn't, then someone just clicks the checkbox, and then that'll upsell them on a related offer. Kind of like, would you like fries with that? But for information products or some similar product.
Yeah, no, Alan, I love those ideas because they're what they do is they take, first of all, I'm not a fan of having that checkbox automatically checked.
However, for sure.
However, it does work, but sometimes you're going to end up with more people that are a little bit upset. But I mean, I'm one who wants to make people happy.
Yeah.
Whereas
absolutely.
there is the other approach, and I'm not saying it's a bad one, which is the whole, well, get the sale, and then if they're not happy about it, you'll refund it. It's not a big deal. But I mean,
I'd rather strive for customer happiness as well. Even if it does cost a few sales, I'd rather have more happy customers, right?
Yeah, and if they're happy, then you're more likely to get them engaged in a conversation to upsell them at a later date, anyways.
Absolutely,
is my opinion. But the other thing I like about this is there's the two sides to it. One is they click a checkbox and they add it to their cart right when they're about to buy the first time. So in retail, they always use, and they still do, to talk about multi-sales, get something, an extra item sold to them. And so that's why when you go to these, you know, you go to checkout, they have all kinds of products at their checkout counter. To be honest with you, they've overdone it now to the point where they're trying to put a product there for every single person again. If they just had one simple little item, like a thing of gum, it would probably sell more often, which is kind of what you're kind of hinting at here. Have a checkbox. Keep it simple, keep it clean, in my opinion. They check the checkbox and they buy that extra product. Take that the extra step, what you said there about the upsells afterwards. So they've bought a small, low-price product, and then they're presented with a more expensive product. I love that concept because they've already, you've established some credibility. They've bought this lower price product. Yeah. And now they're
people get excited. They're already in that buyer's state. They're like, okay, I'm buying stuff. You know, people get excited when they buy stuff, right?
And even if they don't, what happens there is they're exposed to it. And you've already collected their email, and you can then return to them again with a special offer on that product or whatever
you
want
to do.
They
already know what it is. So even if they don't take the offer right away, you're right, then they could at a later date, and they're aware of it. Exactly. So it is a good idea for sure. I've been wanting to implement that for some time. So I think we should definitely work together on that in the future because I think it could be a very profitable endeavor for not myself with Profile Checkback, and I'd be happy to work with you on that, you know? So
that'd be awesome. So that actually kind of is funny because, I mean, we're leading into the other topics just so well. My last one I wanted to talk about was checkout optimization, which essentially is what you talked about. But I wanted to add that we want to keep it very uncluttered. But the other part of all of that, which I touched on with the, you know, when you said you've made a purchase and now you're trying to sell something bigger. There's a couple of things with the checkout process that people don't do that they really need to do. And I've never been a fan of email, I'll be honest with you, but I'm starting to become a convert because I'm learning the statistics on it and I know that it's worth it. But so here's what I'm going to say is make that checkout really clean, really crisp. Let them have an upsell opportunity with a checkbox to buy an extra product. Bring them to another page once they've checked out that says, hey, guess what? Now you can buy this and da-da-da. But in that meantime, you're doing one of two things. You're collecting an email so that you can then turn around and sell them through email, through a drip campaign or otherwise. And the reason I say that is because statistics say that email is the highest conversion rate as far as marketing. It beats Facebook and Google Ads any day of the week. I think you and I have read the same articles on it.
Yep.
That email is your highest conversion, and it's going to drive the right traffic. So the nice thing here is if you've gotten their email address, they were obviously either about to buy and abandon their cart, or they've bought a product. So the other thing is when you have an existing client, those customers that have purchased from you already
mm-hmm.
are the most likely people to purchase again. So you're going to have a higher conversion rate from them than you are from an abandoned cart potential. But if you have that email address, you have an abandoned cart campaign you can put in place to go back to them several times. Or you can have put win-back campaigns in place, which is various campaigns through your email to bring those existing customers back to buy more, get customers who abandon their carts to come back and buy from you, and all of those. And then worst case scenario, if you don't have their email captured, make sure you have remarketing tags on your site so that you can then maybe recapture them in Facebook remarketing or Google remarketing. So when they're searching something out, your ad's going to come up and they're going to be reminded about that product that they bailed on for whatever the reason may have been.
Well, people get busy, right? So there's lots going on. There's a million distractions, you know. Yep. So it's, maybe they just didn't have time to fully, you know, read the whole sales message, for example. Remarketing is a huge, huge thing for conversions. Absolutely. Yeah. Bringing those people back who are at the offer page and maybe just so you get a chance to watch the whole sales video or something like that. So, yeah, that's a great tip. We covered some great stuff here. Nat, you're still with us, eh?
Yeah, I'm just listening, you know. I think it's remarketing certainly works. People hate it, some people, but you know what? If the statistics say it works, then hey, you know, it is what it is. It just depends on how long they're actually remarketing for and actually how far they've gone into the journey before they remarket, because people just get it wrong on many occasions, you know.
Yes, I would agree with that. But I also think that if you've invested any money, time, or anything to get somebody to your website, it doesn't hurt to try and get them back. Because sometimes it's just, you know, it's the power of numbers, right, in sales specifically. There was a stat I read once that when you're trying to sell somebody something, you have to follow up with them 5 times. Before they'll actually buy. And most people, I think it was 44% or more of the salespeople out there only follow up once. I think remarketing is in its own sense that follow-up. So I do think
that makes a lot of sense, Brandon, that does, because I've been following up with all of our leads from brandinggrader.com and And, you know, I mean, I'm probably up to, with some of them, I'm up to about 6 or 7 now. And now they're actually starting to have conversations with me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and you feel almost like you're pushing too hard, but you're really not. If you are reminded by that statistic, it's funny how much traction you get the more you're following up with them. If they get annoyed, they'll tell you where to go, and that's fine too, right? I mean,
I agree.
That's an outcome, right?
There's
a sales quote I read once, and it has a nice ring to it. It says, "Persistence is how you can overcome resistance. Persistence is how you overcome resistance." So you got to stay persistent, because I like that stat, and I try and follow up as often as I can, right? So I did hear a stat the other day. That came from HubSpot, and they're saying that it's so important to follow up right away. So the longer that you leave the follow-up process, the harder it is to convert. So those first few communications are really vital. So I would say that getting those 5 follow-ups in as fast as possible would probably be very beneficial for conversions.
Yes, I would agree with that too. Don't let it sit too long, because if you know, you've got your drip campaign even going out there automatically saying, hey, we noticed you left the cart, blah, blah, blah. And then you wait another week before you send that second one. And then you wait 2 weeks. You're never going to convert it. They're just going to lose interest in it, or they'll be annoyed and they'll add you to a delete bin or whatever. So
yeah. But then there's also following up too quickly, isn't there? I mean, they say you should. Yeah. They say you should follow up within an hour, I believe, for a number of different things. But then don't forget, if you're following up too quickly, it can be slightly intrusive. If you go after the first follow up and then you carry on very quickly, it can be bad, you know.
It's all an art form. Honestly, every bit of conversions is an art form. Sales conversions through, you know, cold calling or whatever, right down to what we talked about today. I think it's all an art form. The nice thing about it is there is technology out there to do split testing and these types of things. And now you can start split testing your email campaign. So, I mean, there's an art and there's a science. And if you can bring the two together as much as possible, I think you've hit a home run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, hey, I think we've covered some great ground here. Thanks so much for being on the show and for having us on your show, Brandon. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. So, yeah, it was an awesome time. I enjoyed it greatly. And awesome. And thanks to both of you guys as well.
You have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever.
Stay hungry.
Stay hungry, stay foolish.
This is the E-Commerce All-Stars podcast, brought to you with heart by Nedimo.com.